If my twang comes out a bit more in front of a microphone.
What else comes out a bit more?
That's it. Keep my pants on.
Every Wednesday, we invite the Humane Society to come in with pets for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
We have like 100% adoption rate off of this particular program, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
So they take pictures of the DJs with the dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the dog that came in Wednesday.
Did it have a little lipstick, a little red rocket?
But nobody noticed.
So is this in the adoption pictures?
So the picture went up with this dog's weenie, a wagon. I'm holding him on my lap.
Oh, no.
I have my hands under his armpits, which just like creates a frame around his wiener schnitzel.
Yes. Here at 104.7 The Bear, we know how to treat our pets.
But I'm guessing that dog's still stuck in Texas.
Oh, is that how you did? Look, I'm glad you said it like that because I was thinking about it, and when we say it together and we're like, stuck in Texas, it actually sounds that we're happy about it. And I can't speak for you, but I don't like living here. Someone recently commented on a Facebook thing.
Right.
That if I don't like living here, why am I talking trash about it, and why don't I just move? And I was like, look, I just, you know, I can be miserable and still be here. And they were like, but this place gives you the money to take care of your child. You're able to afford a house. And it's like, yeah.
Those are all true things.
But you know what else? Like, there are people in abusive relationships that don't have jobs. Just because they can't leave that relationship doesn't mean that they should just accept it and be happy with it.
My whole thing is how many people are stuck in marriages?
Yes.
Because it's true. Like, you get your roots and they get gripped. I mean, I'm not stuck. I guess I am stuck, but it's like a happy stuck.
Yeah, and I'm not stuck in my marriage either. But just because something is providing you with, you know, a few things that are positive doesn't mean that it can also be eating away at your soul. So we're stuck in Texas is all I'm saying. So, Billy. My daughter.
Your daughter.
She's amazing.
She is amazing.
She's just really cute.
She is so cute.
I've been putting little hair bow barrettes in her hair.
How many of them go in your hair as well?
You know, equal amounts just to show that I'm cool.
Right.
A lot of them go in my beard.
Okay. It used to be a trend to do glitter beards, but why not bow beards?
I enjoy that. She'll leave it in for about 10 to 15 seconds and then pulls it out.
Okay.
If she's looking in the mirror, she's a little bit more fascinated by it, so she'll leave it in. But I can't get her to just, like, let it be. And sometimes maybe she's not wearing the most girly clothes or whatever, and I want to take her out, and I want her to still be the cute little girl that she is, rather than somebody going like, oh, that's a big boy you got there. And I'm like, she's actually a sweet little girl. You have a daughter. Was there a point where she just wouldn't allow you to put things in her hair? She let me comb her hair all day long.
That's awesome.
She's like, hey, Dad, pamper me a little bit. I'll rub her back. I'll give her a little shoulder massage. She's like, who needs the day spa when I got Dad?
Daddy is the best.
Yes.
I will give you insight on both women in my life, me and my daughter.
Okay.
I did not have hair until I was 2 years old.
Wow. You're a little bald girl, huh?
So my mom would put me in fluffy pink dresses and take me to the store, and people would say what a cute little boy she had.
No matter what, huh?
No matter what.
You want to know what's crazy? Up until about 5 years old, maybe six, people would tell me that I was so cute, I should have been a little girl.
How'd that affect your mental health?
I don't think it's good. I don't think you should tell a child that they're one way or the other, so they should have been, whether you think it's a compliment or not. Because then, you know, I'm growing up thinking I'm not masculine enough or tough enough.
Is this how you ended up in the Marines? Too many people told you were a pretty little boy?
100%. I was always overcompensating to be tougher. That's why I took karate classes.
Because you look like a girl?
Yes. So, you know, I just want her to really embrace her femininity.
She has time to do all that, man. If she doesn't
want to, I'm saying probably isn't healthy.
If she doesn't want to sexualize herself as a 20-month-old, I feel like that's okay.
Not sexualizing. I'm not dolling her up like she's in the,
here's your one chance, fancy, don't let me down.
You know, that was her mom was prostituting her out in that song. That's,
you're
what that's
kidding.
Okay. Anyway, so you didn't have hair until you were two.
I did not.
Like, I mean, you were probably three to four when your hair was long enough to do anything like that.
I mean...
So what about your daughter?
My daughter was never interested in anything other than buying the bows.
Oh, so she's just walking her through the store and she's like, ooh, let me get that one. Let me get that one. Let me get that one.
Like, she liked them. She would see other people wearing them. But the only time she ever wore them was when she was... Okay, you just took a sip of coffee, and I don't want you to spit it on the computer, so swallow hard.
You're really confident that this is going to get me.
The only time my daughter ever wore a hair bow was when she was a cheerleader and had to.
Okay. I actually think the most surprising thing about that is that Rose was a cheerleader.
Me too.
Because she doesn't come off as the cheerleading type at all.
The only cheerleader type she comes off as is the cheerleaders in Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit video.
Was that a proud time for you? Were you like, oh, yay, because you were into gymnastics. So,
right.
So the kicking and the jumping and stuff, that's, you know, something similar.
I super like the kicking and the jumping parts of cheerleading.
That's it. Just full stop. My sister, one of my sisters, not the lesbian, but the one that's more feminine, she was a cheerleader, and she would get mad at me when I wouldn't acknowledge that cheerleading was an actual sport.
It depends how you do it.
I mean, she was in the competitive stuff.
That stuff is for real.
Yes. Yeah. She was a smaller framed girl, so she was one of the ones getting tossed.
She was a flipper.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A flipper? So, basically, just let Billy be. I can dress her however I want to. Don't worry so much that sometimes people think she's a boy.
Is she a boy?
Well...
I mean, no. So, what's it matter what anybody thinks?
We don't know yet. You know, she's got time to decide.
Kinda, I'm sorry. I thought she had a tiny giny.
We do not call it that. It is a vagina.
A tiny giny.
It is a vagina.
It's a tiny giny.
She has a normal size vagina.
It's not normal size. She's 20 months old. It's tiny.
She's 21 months old. But you know what? We're potty training now.
But she has to wipe her tiny giny.
I go, all right, I'll give her 2 pieces of toilet paper.
Wow, big spender.
And I'll say, all right, wipe your vagina. And she's standing up and she wipes herself and then puts it in her little kid's toilet. And then I'll do it just to make sure that it's done correctly. But it's so cute to just see her be like, okay, you know, she's like, but it's just her copying our movements.
That's sweet.
And she won't have shampoo yet, but she'll have her hands in her hair. She's a great little copycat when she wants to be.
So how are you using this to your advantage? It sounds like she's learning how to groom herself like a monkey. That's great.
But the problem is that whenever we want her to do something that she doesn't necessarily want.
Right.
She has really perfected the art of saying no.
That's an amazing talent. You want your girl to be able to say no.
I get it. And maybe later in life, it'll be much more beneficial to her. But right now, when we're like, hey, let's eat. And she's like, no. No. Hey, let's go read a book. It's time for bed. No. No. Hey, is dad your favorite parent? No. No. Like, she's getting it all wrong. So, like, I know it's called the terrible twos. And I know that, like, saying no is a big part of that. But I just want to encourage her to be a little more yes than no.
Okay.
I know it's a... this isn't even me asking for advice, really, at this point. It's just a little bit of frustration. I'm just airing it out.
That's right.
I know that her saying no is part of her developing independence. But sometimes I just want to be like, it's yes right now. Like, let's say yes. You know, when I was asked if I wanted to be a father, I didn't say no. I said yes, so let's pay it back a little bit.
You're here because of me, little one.
Yes.
There, okay, so you want the bat packs.
I want her to be on Team Daddy a little bit.
You want the pats on the back. Good Daddy, thank you for making me, because I totally understand that.
All right, the way you said that just then made it sound like I'm a crazy person.
What?
I will give one positive thing about her, though.
Everything's positive about that child. So, she's adorable.
You say that because you get to spend a little bit of time with her every now and then, and I tell you, no one believes me, this child puts on a show for everybody else.
I love it. That show is great. It's, you know, favorite show.
Lee and I will be, like, alone during nap time or something. We'll be like, hey, do you want to enjoy a cup of coffee before it rises? We know what's coming. Speaking of the sleep stuff, I just want to take a moment to brag as a father.
Go for it.
So I read something about children waking up too early. She's been waking up like around 6 o'clock or whatever.
Get that kid a job.
And it's not giving us enough time. So I read something where you just go in there and you tell them, like, hey, it's not time to get up yet, and you tuck them back in.
Okay.
They might cry for a little bit or whatever, but just, like, start setting the present. Like, this is not the time that we wake up.
Okay.
So this morning, 6:15, she's making some noise. I go in there, and this has been the case a lot lately. She's laying on the floor. So I picked her up. And I laid her in the bed, and while I was holding her, I was like, hey, we're going to sleep a little bit longer. And I laid her in the bed, and I tucked her in. I gave her a little kiss. I was like, hey, we're gonna lay down some more. And she slept until 8 o'clock.
That's amazing.
And I told Lee that I was going to do this. And my wife, she says, good luck.
Well, do you think that was her nap?
No.
Is she going to take a nap today, too?
Well, she's at the babysitter, so that's for her to deal with. But, yeah, I think so. I think because we've been having this issue with her not sleeping like as late as she was.
And for you, it's really different because you work. Is it home second shift?
Yeah, and I get home at like 11:30 at night. So for me to wake up before 8 o'clock is tough anyway.
Right. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not. So, you know, I'm really pushing for this. So today, I mean, it was just perfect. And it's one of those moments where we're like, man, we love this kid so much.
You called her this kid instead of it?
Yeah. That's a good way to end the segment right there. I loved her so much, I called her a kid instead of an it.
She's fantastic. I love me some Billy.
Yeah, she's...
Even though it's in small doses.
Which, I would recommend it.
So for the comedy side of things, we decided that we were going to watch Dane Cook's Comedy Central Presents when he was, like, an infant.
I mean, he was a young fella.
He was so young.
At that time. Yeah, so it's his Comedy Central Present half hour, which comes out to 21 minutes when you take out the commercials. And I would say this blew him up. You know, he does this. And then he has an album that comes out, Retaliation. He just starts becoming the biggest name in stand-up comedy. And I would say this. Everyone talks about the comedy boom of the 80s. And comedy clubs died down. Like, you could go anywhere and see comedy in the 80s. But in the 90s, it really kind of started to peter out a little bit. However, I would say the 90s were the boom for comedy on television.
For sure.
When Comedy Central came out, you had Comedy Central Presents, you had Comedy Central's Premium Blend, which was like 12-minute sets. There was all this content.
One of the phrases you just used there is integral to that. It was all Comedy Central. Everything that was being picked seemed to be picked by Comedy Central.
Well, no, because HBO had some of the best specials out at the time. Showtime was doing a lot of comedy specials.
Neither of those came on my basic cable package.
Right.
So for me, it was Comedy Central.
Okay. But also at that time, the late night stuff was still important.
For sure.
So you had Johnny Carson and then Jay Leno. You had Letterman. All these guys, they would have at least a comedian on probably once a week. And it was really showcasing comedians. Then, like, the early 2000s, it really started to die down. They weren't showcasing comedians as much. So with Dane Cook's, this is at the prime of Comedy Central's content.
Okay.
He comes out. I mean, the first thing he talks about is being a rock star.
Right. Which is hilarious because he is not a rock star.
And it's also not the only comedian to talk about that. Greg Barrett, and I believe it was his Comedy Central, he talked about how comedians want to be rock stars. And I don't know.
For sure. They want to be, but Dane Cook's not a rock star.
Right, but what he's saying is, he comes out and he's like, you know, comedians, we say, how y'all doing? Tell me how you feel from a round of applause. You feeling good? Round of applause. And then he goes, a rock star can just come out and be like, New York, ow! You know, he's saying like how much cooler it would be to be a rock star. And what I think in that moment, he is establishing energy. He's coming out and he's like, hey, I'm not just a guy that stands up and talks. I'm coming out full force.
And he is not a guy who just stands around and talks. In fact, even walking to the stage, he jumped on a table. And at the end, when he jumped on the table again, it looked to me like he was humping a girl's head.
Okay, so I'm glad that you said that, because here's one thing that I was going to put into the negatives of that Comedy Central present and his style. It's very physical.
Absolutely. And it would not translate to, like, Netflix is a joke on Sirius.
And I actually played it in the car on my iPhone with the screen off so I could just listen to it again because I've seen it before. And some of the stuff doesn't translate as well when you're just listening. So, like, what you're saying, I didn't even know that that happened.
Right.
He's doing bits about being a snake. I remember that he moves like a snake. When he talks about being angry, you can just let people know.
Right.
And he wiggles his butt.
Right.
Like a rattlesnake. Just listening, you don't catch that.
Right. So, same thing when he's doing his alien bit. It wouldn't make as much sense.
So what does he do during the alien bit? Because I don't remember that one as well.
So he takes his arm and he sort of hyperextends it behind his back so that and his hand is kind of a fin on the back of his, between his shoulder blades. And he spent a lot of time in a third world squat.
Yes. He gets down low. I remember one time.
It's impressive. I wonder if his knees are still any good.
He's like a catcher in Major League Baseball.
It was amazing.
Well, and I do remember there was one moment because I heard him say, he was like, hi, come on this journey with me or something like that, where he was laying on the floor looking directly into the camera.
That was a great moment in my opinion.
You did like that?
I did, because it seemed to me like he just caught the camera. Like it was unplanned, unscripted. Watching it on screen, he's breaking the third wall.
So since we started with the negative thing and I went ahead and mentioned the physical, another negative that I have, because like that moment right there might be the only personal moment in the set. To me, there's nothing personal about what he's discussing.
No, it's not.
When he walks away, you don't know anything more about him than when he came up on stage.
I found out that he has really good instincts on falling and that he has an amazing squat.
That's all you know about him.
I did learn both of those things during that set.
You know what's interesting, though? Because he does go into one personal detail, and that's that his first job was working at Burger King. In that bit, he talks about his brother was the one that got him the job because he was the manager at Burger King, and his brother was an asshole. His brother thought he was the Burger King. Now, here's what's interesting. This is a foreshadowing into his future because he's talking about what a terrible manager his brother was.
Okay.
He later, in real life, hires his brother to be his manager, and his brother stole millions from him.
What a dick move.
Yeah, and it really messed up Dank. Like, he lost all trust of people, cut him off from his family, and again, he lost millions of dollars. So it's interesting that in his first special, he has a bit talking about what an asshole his brother is, and then in real life, later, like years down the road, he ended up stealing millions of dollars from him.
I think that is true in all of our lives, though, is that when you're growing up with people, we all have our phases where we're assholes.
I just wish that I wouldn't have caught you during your phase.
mine's really hanging on. I may just be an asshole.
All right, well, just so people don't think that we're both assholes, let's talk about more of the positive things of that and something that you could take away from it.
One of the things that I took away from it is I am losing out by standing behind a mic stand.
If you go take a class, this will be one of the things that they say is that when you open your set and you take the microphone out of the stand and then move that stand over to the side, and if you were watching me, I'm kind of swinging my arm out. What you're doing in that moment is opening the door to let the audience in.
Wow.
Because now there's nothing in between you. And then at the end of the set, when you grab the stand and bring it back in front of you, you're closing the door and you're letting the audience know, and now it's time for us to say goodbye.
I've seen comedians do that probably a couple of hundred of times.
Yes.
And I've never felt like it was opening the door and closing the door.
But imagine, like, if someone just sat there with their arms crossed.
Okay.
There's a barrier there. It's not good body language.
For sure.
Having the microphone stand there is still, like, another barrier between people.
I get it.
So when it moves over, it is kind of more inviting. And I get it. It's just a very thin pole in front of somebody. And I often will leave, especially in a short set. Now, here's the thing. You've been doing a lot of short
sets. All I've been doing is short.
So
it's a physiological connection.
when I do something that's, you know, 5 minutes or less, a lot of times I'll leave the microphone stand there, and then I like to use my hands. But, you know, I become very descriptive with my hands.
For sure. If you leave the mic in the stand, it opens you up for different physical movement.
And, look, there's nothing Dane Cook could have done in a set if he left the microphone in the stand. Like you said, how many times did he fall down? How many times is he laying on the ground?
I should have kept count. It was impressive.
I bet it's at least 3 to 4 in a 21-minute set.
He had some tumbles.
He's really using that opportunity to move around. The crowd loves him.
For sure.
You know, when he comes out, when he starts out with the stuff about rock and roll, they're not quite there yet. But as soon as he moves into it, and, you know, his style of comedy was being very repetitive. He's like, I wish I was a snake. You know, I want to be a snake. I want the fangs. I want to just sliver. I want to sliver around.
Sliver?
Or whatever. What is it?
Slither. Sliver is like a small piece of pie. I know you're not familiar with that.
Oh, you're getting ready for your rose battle. Good job. And then I'll end the positive stuff with the way he opens up his set, talking about comedians are the only ones who go, how's everybody doing tonight? Round of applause if you're doing good. He ends his set by going, thank you. Round of applause if you had a good time tonight. So he bookended his set with that round of applause joke, which, you know, we talked about doing callbacks in the past, but to be able to open and close it in a way that made sense.
Right.
Like that, I thought that was a really good. You know, I'm talking about how physical he is, but that was a really good example of good writing.
Here are my insights into the Dane Cook Comedy Central Presents. How many brilliant comedic minds are we drugging with all the Ritalin we're prescribing? Because Dane Cook, either he's seriously on something or he's got some huge hyperactivity, ADD, ADHD, ABCD. He's got something going on there. And I feel like he would have been a prime target for Ritalin in this day and age, but he grew up before that.
Yeah, he's probably in his early 50s right now. I think I'm 42. I think my generation was the first one to get really hit with Ritalin. That's what hyperactive minds do. I think a lot of comedians and performers probably, you know, have a little bit of this going on, and they're able to express that in a manner similar to what Dane Cook was doing.
If a comedian's mind worked exactly the same way as every norm out there, nobody would want to watch it. You could just listen to your own voices in your heads.
And believe me, I got a lot of them up there. So now I asked you to watch one more thing.
Right.
And that was Anthony Jeselnik doing an impression of Dane Cook. And it was kind of at the height of Dane Cook. Did you do that?
I did. I watched it. Honestly, it was hilarious. But Anthony could not go to the absolute ridiculous extremes that Dane went to.
I mean, I thought it was a pretty spot on. And he really hit on the repetitive style. You know, he's like, my nephew got a goldfish. He got a little fish in a bowl.
He's got the gills.
Yes. You know, that was a physical movement that he does.
Now,
he also squatted down.
The thing about how Anthony did it and how Dane would have done it, in my opinion, and this is not going to go in because you can't see me, so I'm just going to do it for you.
Well, I can describe it. So you step away from the microphone. You're giving yourself space because you're impersonating Dane Cook, so you need room.
So Anthony did like this.
Anthony
squatted.
Anthony does a little squat, and he does the hand next to the cheeks gill movement.
Now, when Dane Cook would do it, I feel like, first of all, his squat is ridiculously low, and that he would have also turned and moved his body in a lot more ways.
So what Kelly thinks Dane Cook's difference would be is that he would still do the hands next to the cheekbones like a cat, but when he squatted down, he'd be almost on the ground, and then he would slither back and forth.
He'd
move his body in a wavy motion.
He would undulate the way a fish does when it swims.
Yes.
And that he probably would have also moved forward. He possibly would have landed on the floor and flopped.
And flopped around.
Because
belly up.
He is so ridiculous.
It's dead.
And then when he does that thing where he's like, oh, and I tried to turn him over, it would have expected, if he was truly imitating Dane Cook, that Anthony would have been on the ground in a ridiculous fashion, just completely ridiculous, and then flopped around and flopped over on the belly and kept rolling. In my opinion, I loved it, but I didn't feel like he went as far as Dane Cook. When you're impersonating someone, I feel you not only need to go as far as they would, but you need to step over the line.
Yeah.
And he didn't get that. But it was an amazing bit.
That is a good point. I will, in his defense, I will say, as far as not laying on the floor, it was an outdoor show. And in LA, you can't be dirty.
Commit to your art.
Otherwise, people might think you're a homeless person.
Maybe they'll give him some money.
Here's what I just want to, in this little review on of the Anthony Jeselnik impersonation. He does his joke in his style first.
Yes.
And then he does it in the style of Dane Cook. And I think one of the most impressive parts is, for the most part, other than the stuff he's adding as Dane Cook, it's a lot of the same words. It's absolutely the same premise and the same joke through and through.
Yes.
With just a little bit different style. But even more impressive is the fact that he doesn't really change a lot. He just changes the delivery and adds a little extra note here and there. And this is something that you can learn from it, right? Is that some styles work for some people better than others. Some styles are more for the words, and some styles are more for the thoughts, to really kind of visualize what the person is doing. Jeselnik is kind of monotone.
He's very straight man.
Just straight man. Here's the horrible thing that I'm saying to make you laugh. Dane Cook is energy. He's very high energy. He's like, hey, I'm the party guy. And these are two different people who have both had success in doing the things that they do. And I think what that is finding your voice. When people talk about that, you got to find your voice. It's really finding out who you are on stage and being comfortable with that personality and like putting it out there for people to consume.
Okay.
And that's what you're really working on in your first couple of years.
I'm working towards it. I don't feel like I'm any closer to actually finding my...
No, but you've changed. In the 6 months that you've been doing it, you have changed to being, in my opinion, more natural.
Does anybody really want a natural woman? You make me feel like a woman.
Does it not say natural? Oh, you know what? That was the commercial. There was like probably a deodorant commercial or maybe a douche commercial. That was saying, although so, if you're douching, you don't want it to be natural, do you? You're trying to cover something up.
Like, what are you doing? Just like firebombing that thing with some vinegar?
Put yogurt up in there, because then it gives it the proper bacteria that you need to be pH balanced.
I will do that as soon as you put yogurt in your vagina.
Well, I don't have a vagina, but I'm for real. You don't want to get flavored yogurt. Just regular yogurt, not vanilla or anything crazy like that, then that will help balance. This is for everybody listening. If your tiny giny has a little
funky wonky,
put a little yogurt up in there, regular yogurt, no flavor. It'll help clear it up. That's doctor stuff.
Oh, okay, Dr. Burrow.
I'm not saying I'm a doctor.
Thank you.
What other doctors have said.
Lee did tell me that you are an amateur gynecologist.
You know, I've done some things. So I like the fact that we were able to watch that at the same time and really kind of dissect it.
Here's the bottom line. Did you enjoy it?
Yes. It's not my favorite that he did. I think Dane Cook's Vicious Circle is probably my favorite special that he did, that, and that was an HBO special. And his album, Retaliation, is for sure my favorite work that he did.
Now, that's an album, so he has to rely on his writing as opposed to his physical performance.
It's still a lot of energy, and his performances, that repetitive thing, that was a trick that he figured out to really win the audience over. I don't think anybody else would ever be able to perform like that. It would honestly seem like a Dane Cook ripoff.
I don't think Dane Cook can perform that way anymore. Not in his 50s.
I used to see him at the Comedy Store when I worked there. And yeah, he's much more of kind of a normal delivery now.
I feel like he would need Coke in order to have that same sort of energy that he had in those early days.
Coke, Diet Coke, or Coke Zero? You think he needs the sugar? And so, again, I just think that the thing to really learn between him and Justin is everyone has a different style. The one that's most natural to you is the one that's going to work the best, and that's what performing for years will do for you.
I also enjoy dissecting that and just seeing the difference in perspective and hashing it out between someone who's been in the comedy world for so long and someone who's brand spanking new. I mean, I've always been a comedy fan, but I've never really dissected or broken anything apart
except
a frog, and that was in high school, and I didn't like it.
Well, thank God it was just the frog, because once you start moving over to cats and dogs, then there's a whole sociopathy that we have to worry about. One thing that I did early on in my career, and that's, you know, we talked about earlier, was I just watched a bunch of specials.
Right.
You know, that helps learn the joke structure and everything like that. So I really do suggest that you continue to watch other specials, even ones from years and years ago. Maybe kind of look and see how comedy has evolved. I think it was a lot easier in the 70s because it was in its infancy. You know, Richard Pryor was groundbreaking. George Carlin was why we now say that comedians can be the modern day philosophers because of some of the stuff that they were doing. But if you put their material up against material today, it wouldn't be as powerful. And, you know, a lot of it is because they're the ones who started it. So there were a lot of copycats afterwards.
For sure.
But I think that comedy has become more difficult over time because you're limited to what you can do and say. It becomes more personal because everyone's made observations about airplane food. I think that by watching older stuff and going through the years, you can really see how comedy has evolved into what it is today, and that will help you become a better writer for the stage.
So moving on to the new subjects of today, a couple of things. Number one, I just found out, you know that I'm a DJ. I work in a 4-station group. One of the DJs on another station came up to me and said, "Hey, yeah, we used to have this girl named Jasmine Ellis who worked here forever ago, and she ended up going down and pursuing comedy." He said in Austin, but when I Facebook stalked her, it turns out it's Arlington.
Which is outside of Dallas?
It is.
Okay, so
that's where the AT&T Stadium is, where the Cowboys play.
Yeah, so she's a Dallas-Fort Worth comedian then.
In theory, yes.
Yeah, I mean, she can live in Arlington, but she's doing comedy in Dallas.
Arlington is as much Dallas as anything else is.
Okay, so have you looked into any of her stuff? Have you checked out any of, does she have clips online?
She does a lot about being a black woman.
Okay.
Which doesn't translate very well for me. I just thought it was really cool that I'm literally following in somebody else's footsteps that I didn't really know I was doing. And
did you know her when she worked here?
I did not know this woman existed until earlier this week.
Well, that's unfortunate because, you know, it would be nice to have someone that you were connected to in some way to help you out down there and to maybe give you some insight.
I'm looking forward to reaching out to her, though, and possibly, you know, just picking her brain about her journey from being on air to on stage, because it's so different.
It is. But also, I think doing this, you become more comfortable with the microphone. Obviously, it's not in front of an audience, but it's good training. You were able to start off stronger than most people, I think.
I had a little head start. I've also done, I don't know if you know this, I've done voiceover, but I've also done acting. I have some TV commercials.
Yeah, from the performance aspect, that's fine. I think speaking into the microphone in a loose environment like this was probably more beneficial because you have to go up on the stage with your own material when
yes.
you're doing stand-up comedy. So being used to coming up with ideas and things to talk about on the radio, even though it doesn't necessarily, it's not in joke format, it still made you feel comfortable in thinking, these are the things that I have in my mind, and I want to share them with people, and it has value.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, you at least think that it has value.
Right.
And then you're able to test it out and see how much value it actually has.
So that was really cool, just kind of finding that connection. It made me warm and fuzzy just to know that it was out there. And then the second thing is, this Monday, I am going to attempt to do a minute at Kill Tony, which I know is an outer space reach. You go, you're a, one name in a bucket with 100 names in it. So you got a, what, maybe 6 or 7 in 100 chance of getting called?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on... It's become really popular in Austin. We were in Los Angeles, and Tony was doing a show there. The sign-up for it was incredible. I mean, there were so many people signing up for it. It was, you know, ridiculous. And I think Austin has built up to that point as well. There's probably 60 people. Maybe it's not quite that many, but they do 7.
That's the key. I've never caught that.
I think there's like 7 comedians that they'll pick. Being one of those, like you said, there's like a 1 in 10 chance that you're going to get picked. So I'll give you a couple names that you can reach out to and see if there's another mic or something that you can reach out to. Don't make that your sole purpose going down. Well, try to find another mic or something that you can hop on while you're down there, either before or after Kill Tony.
I'm trying very hard to only miss one day of work because I will have to miss a day of work.
I mean, that same night.
So I am leaving after I do my Monday show.
Yes.
It's 5 hours to Austin.
Okay. So you think that's going to be it, just the time that you're going to spend there?
By the time I get to Austin, if I leave at the end of my show when we go off air at 2, I'm not getting there till 7. I'm going to be pushing to make that. And then I will not drive back after. So... it's already going to cost me, it looks like it's about $150 for a hotel. So I've already decided I am a mother and I am such a responsible and reliable human being. That's what kids do to you. You're like, oh, I'm happy-go-lucky and I'll sleep on people's floors and I'll do whatever. I'll stay up all night in an airport or a bar. But then you become a parent and you're like, I'm going to need a hotel for that Monday night.
Well, you're investing a lot into 1 minute, which I think is fine. My first open mic, I drove from Tehachapi, California, down to San Diego, California. It was like 4 hours. So I get the desire to do it and to try something new. What I will say is that the 1 minute is important in getting the audience to like you. So you got to be quick. You need probably 3 punchlines in that 1 minute. That's what I would shoot for at minimum. I mean, that's actually long to get a laugh every 20 seconds. So I shoot for maybe 4 punchlines in the minute. That's to get them to like you.
Okay.
The most important part of Kill Tony is the interview. Like, you got to crush the interview.
Okay.
So he's going to go back and watch it.
I have.
He'll ask you, like, what do you like to do for fun?
Hold on. Let's hold the horses here.
Okay.
For my section of the show here, I would like you to give me a Kill Tony interview.
Okay.
Coming off of an amazing set. Let's just start there.
Okay. Wow, Kelly, wow, that was a good 1 minute. You know, it's rare that we get someone that we enjoy so much. Usually, you know, it's always disappointing. So what a relief. How long have you been doing comedy?
6 months.
6 months, and that's impressive. Where do you do comedy at?
Wichita Falls, Texas. It's I'm sure you've heard of it.
Actually, no. What is in Wichita Falls? I've heard of Texas.
Yes.
Because we're here. But what is Wichita Falls?
It is where dreams go to die. That's where Mitch Burrow ended up.
Oh, Mitch Burrow, guest of the show before he ended up quitting comedy. You'll have to tell him that we said hello. How do you know Mitch Burrow?
We actually do a podcast together. I met him after a comedy show, and I completely harassed him, and now we do a podcast.
So to help your career, to try and get started in comedy, you decided it would be a good idea to learn from someone who failed.
Yes, I want to hitch my wagon to that horse.
And he is a very horse-like person.
I've never been in a stall beside him, so I can't comment.
So what do you do in Wichita Falls?
I am a radio DJ.
Okay. Is it like a Sirius XM or...
No. It is old school terrestrial radio. It's even old school rock. Everything is old, so me included.
You're basically unemployed.
I'm knocking on the door.
You're working in a dying industry. So is that why you decided to try and start doing comedy so you'd have something to fall back on?
Well, it's classic rock, so I just needed something new.
Okay, so you work as a DJ, but what do you do for fun?
Whippets.
And the way you said it so fast, like, I don't even care that you don't do whippets.
I do not do whippets.
That was funny. And he's going to call you out. You know, he's going to be like, you're a mother and you do whippets? And you can just keep playing with it there. You're like, yeah, I have two kids. That's the only way to survive.
Whippets are dogs, right?
Be high. And, you know, he's going to ask you some more questions. He might, you know, when he's listening to you, he's taking notes.
He does take notes.
So if you say something about your husband, he might ask you what your husband does. This is where you have to make a decision.
Okay.
Because you've decided to maintain your privacy of your personal life.
I try to keep myself anonymous enough.
I mean, here's the thing. You fuck Maverick.
Mm.
You have sex with the real life Maverick on a day-to-day basis.
My husband is way cooler than Maverick, one.
But
and number two.
But so when Tony asks you what you do for fun.
Whippets.
Oh, my God. You know, that's something to think about. Or if he brings up your husband.
He always does.
He'll say, like, what does your husband do? You could just say he's the real life Maverick. And be like, what? Well, yeah, he was a fighter pilot. He got to ride around in whatever jet that he rode around in, but he's retired, so now he just rides around in me or something like that. And I'm just as exciting as an F-18 or what.
I'm just as exciting as an F-15, but I'm built more like a 737.
Yeah. So these are things that I would think about, what you're willing to say. I think your husband is comfortable with you mentioning him.
The thing is I can't say anything that's bad about him because he doesn't do anything that's at all questionable.
But you don't have to. Like, what we just said were funny things. The interview is about you being endearing and them liking you, right? So you being married to that guy, that's interesting. You being a DJ on radio, that's interesting. You know, these are things that are unique to you that nobody else is going to get up there and talk about. If you just go, like, I'm a mother of two kids, so I don't have a lot of spare time.
That's not true. I did not have a lot of spare time raising two kids. Right now, I feel like I have an opportunity to do something new with my life, which is why we're where we're at.
Also, like the Boy Scouts.
I have thought that there may be a way that he usually asks at the end of the interview, anything else interesting about you? And I've considered saying, I'm a lifeguard.
Okay.
Because it's funny, because I'm in my mid-40s.
Yes.
And all lifeguards are like 16. It just makes me look like a pedophile.
But also, I would look at your short stature. If my 300-pound butt is going under, I'm going to see you jump in to save me, and I'm just going to be like, well,
it's been a good run.
Cruel world.
You know that I can save you, right?
100%. Because, first of all, body fat is very buoyant. So I'm probably not going to be going under anyway. There's all kinds of techniques and things like that. So, I mean, these are things that you could talk about.
That's the thing that people don't understand is if there's like a 6'3 lifeguard coming after you, they may have zero technique. When you've got a 5'2 buck something coming at you, you know that every bit of their technique is perfect. It has to be, or they can't do the.
And you could point out, like, it would be harder for you to save Tony than it would be to save Red Band.
Yeah, he's not as buoyant.
Because Tony's just going to sink. Red Band's going to be like a cork on the end of a fishing line.
Tony is built like every child I've had to give extra instruction to learn how to float.
Yeah, something like that. I don't really think that's mean. Just saying, like, hey, man, you're not.
He is. He's built like an 11-year-old boy who just went through a growth spurt.
I think that's a good, like, what else is interesting about you? I'm a lifeguard. Huh? Yeah, and then you kind of go into it a little bit. So I think if you get called up, you'll be ready.
Okay.
We talked one-on-one about, you know, picking your favorite bits and really cutting it down to kind of just the punchlines.
Right.
Just so you can be in that 1 minute, just be pop, pop, pop.
So it's more like the Whitman sampler than getting, like, an entire chocolate cake. You're getting a little piece of this, a little piece of that, a little piece of that.
Is that the gold box, the yellow box?
Those aren't really good, are they?
Is that the Whitman, though?
Yeah.
I love those.
You
it
love
gives
it?
You the sheet that tells you what everything is.
I'd like to be the Godiva sampler.
I don't know which one I like the most, But I know I always eat the chocolate covered cherries first.
Really?
Yeah, I was really into black chicks for a little while. And now I'm not allowed to do that anymore, not only because I'm married, but because I'm stuck in Texas. And they look down on that. Anyway, so I just want to say good luck getting on Kill Tony. Getting your name pulled out of the bucket is going to be the hardest part. It's going to be disappointing if you don't.
I don't really believe that I'm going to get called on my first time. I'm really excited to just go and see and be. I've listened to so many episodes of Kill Tony. It's going to be neat to kind of be there and be able to put what I've imagined in my mind into what's really going on.
Well, I think there's another show after Kill Tony. I just suggest watch Kill Tony, be there for it, but then maybe try to catch another show. If you're not going to try and perform, at least try and see something else.
You know,
that way you can kind of get an idea. You know, you got to perform on one show with me in Dallas.
Yes. That was amazing.
And Austin has a whole different scene. And I'm glad that you thought that was amazing, because it makes me feel glad. You know, I'm happy that I'm able to share that with you. But Austin has a really good scene. And it's different than Dallas. So maybe just try and pop in on one other show while you're there to watch it and see how those comedians are performing and how those audiences are reacting. And maybe next time, you know, with a little more notice, I can reach out to a couple people and maybe try and get you a 5-minute spot on something.
That's insanely amazing.
But good luck. I think you'll do great. Just be calm and be yourself in the interview. You know, you might get that golden ticket.
That invitation to come be part of the secret show on Thursday.
Ooh, that would be something.
That's the treat that they dangle out there. If you really blow them away, they will invite you to be part of the secret show on Thursday.
It almost becomes a
not so secret show.
Well, no, I was going to say, like, you almost don't want to win it when you look it back and you go, all right, cool, I get to drive another a 10-hour round trip to do 5 minutes of comedy. So
I'm okay with it. I mean, honestly,
you're so much your first year in that
right.
You're so eager.
There's nothing but excitement right here.
Yeah, sometimes when I was still in LA, I'd get offered a show and it might be 15 minutes away and I'd just be like, I really don't feel like making that drive. So I'm glad you're not jaded yet.
Not yet. Give me time.
And your excitement is a little contagious. You know, I started reaching out more to the people in Dallas and I started booking a couple shows here and there. We already have a show booked in a couple of weeks in Dallas. So, you know, once again, we'll be able to kind of sit back, review what we did, kind of get an idea how your comedy has progressed for audiences outside of 10 people open mics.
10 people is generous.
So I'm excited.
Me too.
Even though we're still
stuck
in Texas.
Oh, that excitement comes through.
Thanks, Kelly. I had a great time today.
Me too, Mitch. If you were going to be a musical album, what type of music would you be?
Country, because you can hide your lack of singing ability with the twang. Blaming all on my roots. I showed up in boots. See, that you cover that up. But if I was trying to be like R&B, blame it all on my... Actually, I guess I could do anything.
You definitely have the confidence for it.
What about the voice?